Hello, and welcome to This Week in History class. I'm John Larson. We've been off for a couple weeks and had a spring break. Hopefully the kids had some fun, and now we're back. This week, we are going to be looking at primarily the 1960s again, but primarily Vietnam and what's going on in Vietnam at the time. It's a little bit shorter than our last podcast. Last podcast ran a little bit on the lengthy side in terms of what we have put out in the past, not nearly as long as some of the other podcasts out there. But this week it'll be a little bit shorter. I know some of the students who are listening to it will appreciate that, but for any other fans of the show, it's going to be a little shorter this week. The first thing we're going to listen to is Brooklyn and Savannah talk about something called the Great Inflation.
1960 to 1985 was the Great Inflation that caused the price of things to increase a lot. We are just going to talk about how the prices changed from 1960 to 1969.
A new house in the 1960s cost $12,700, and by 1969 it was $15,500. The average income for a person in the 1960s was $5,300, and by 1969 it was $8,500. A gallon of gas in the 1960s cost about 25 cents, and by 1969 it was 35 cents. A new car cost about $2,600, and by 1969 it was $3,200. Lastly, in 1969 a gallon of milk cost about 49 cents, and in 1969 it was $1.10.
Around the time that this was happening was when the baby boom was ending. The Great Inflation was blamed on oil prices, currencies, speculators, businessmen, and union leaders. After all this happened in the 1960s, it formed how we look at the political world today.
Thanks, Rachel and Savannah. Now we're going to look at something similar. We're going to look at some pricing stuff, but in agriculture. Rachel is going to take us through changes in agriculture in the 1960s, as well as their effects on the Vietnam War.
Hi guys, I'm going to be talking about the agriculture in the U.S. and the Vietnam. In the U.S., 9 million people served in the military. In 1970, about 25% of the U.S. population was living on farms or in towns. Roughly 2.25 million men would leave the town for the military during the Vietnam era. In the 1960s, almost all farms were introduced to machines, but the war forced many farmers to become even more efficient by buying larger and more specialized machines and concentrating their operations on one main crop. Now turning tables to the other side, to Vietnam. They are still dealing with the impact that the U.S. gave them. In the air, American forces dropped more than 8 million tons of explosives in both urban and rural areas. However, there are not enough resources to defuse remaining bombs in the rural area. When farmers attempt to revive their area to plant crops, they have unfortunately hit some of these bombs and suffer severe injuries. In addition, children mistake these bombs as toys, which result in many casualties. In Vietnam, the main source of income for people in poverty is agriculture. These remaining bombs prevent farmers from reviving their land and making a living. The chemical warfare has the most effect on these people and plants. The toxic chemical called Agent Orange was sprayed onto the field by airplanes. The Agent Orange objective was to completely destroy plants along with any living organism in the intended area. Originally, the chemical was used to kill the forest, but its side effect is hard to ignore. Close to 2 million acres of agriculture and land and forest were destroyed. The toxic chemical also has the ability to cause mutations in human genes. Many children who were born in affected areas are deformed and have many disabilities. Also, the war comes with many human casualties. The war not only reduced their population, but the soldiers suffered heavy casualties because of lack of medical supply and the lack of necessary medical knowledge. Many soldiers did not have the right treatments and are still suffering from the wounds today. The new government did not have the resources to take care of disabled veterans, and they became jobless. These soldiers eventually begin to live in poverty. Thank you for listening to my podcast.
Thanks, Rachel. Now, while all those things were going on, you actually had a war going on in Vietnam. And so we're going to turn now to something Jenna has brought up for us, and that is a segment on dogfights in the Vietnam War.
All right. Well, hello to everyone, and welcome to This Week in History class. It's Jenna again, and I'll be talking about more exciting stuff, mainly the Vietnam War. Well, I guess it's pretty broad, so specifically I'll be talking about a few key dogfights during the Vietnam War and the planes that ruled the skies. So you might be a little confused at this point. I'm not talking about actual dogfights, you know, where two four-legged furry things weighing about 80 pounds go at it. This is more about the multi-million dollar, 9-ton steel bird in the sky, containing intelligent pilots who were relied on greatly to help protect soldiers and other planes from the dangerous MiGs that were in the air. We're going to start early in the war, with the MiG killers of Midway. The whole skirmish started a few months before, on April 3, 1965, when for the first time a strike package from the carrier the Hancock was engaged by a quartet of MiG-17s. A group of F-8 Crusaders were sent to bomb the Dong Phong Thong Bridge, escorted by four F-4Bs, but due to communication errors, the fighters did not engage in the battle itself. One Crusader was badly damaged, but no communist jets were shot down. The next day, the MiGs downed two Air Force F-105Ds during a follow-up attack on the bridge. Enter June 17, 1965. Aboard the USS Midway, strike aircraft are launched, 100 miles from the North Vietnamese coast. The goal this time is the Than Ho Railroad Bridge to slow the movement of supplies to the south. Among the package are two F-4 Phantom IIs, led by Commander Lou Page and his radar intercept officer, or RIO, Lieutenant J.C. Smith in the back seat. On this mission, the first MiG kills of the Vietnam War were to occur. Encountering four MiGs, the Phantoms engaged them. They were credited later with two confirmed kills and one damaged. A lot of the dogfights in Vietnam were extremely dangerous. Typically, the fighting begins at high altitudes, but with each passing minute, through desperate maneuvers and dives that the fight requires, the planes get closer and closer to the ground. In Vietnam, where the geographic features vary and mountains can hinder flight, the pilots that battled and survived truly were the best. In places like that, there is no room for error, or you will never make a mistake again. One of the most important planes during the Vietnam War was the F-4 Phantom II. These planes were the first to be able to detect, intercept, and shoot down anything on their radar without ground help. They were the precursor to the best aerial fighter jet of its time, the F-8 Crusader. The F-4s lacked front guns, carrying only missiles, which made it hard for them to kill the fast-moving MiG planes they were up against. The Crusaders had the added front gun, earning them the title, The Last Gunfighter. They were engaged in most of the aerial battles that occurred during the war. They were the beginning of a new era in flight history, leading into the fighter jets we use today, like the F-14s, F-15s, F-16s, F-22s, AC-130s, and A-10s, just to name a few. On May 19, 1967, an attack attempt is made on Hanoi, the communist capital of North Vietnam. Escorting two A-4 bombers, 12 Crusaders had one job: protect the A-4s until they drop the bombs on a thermal power plant in Hanoi, then escort them safely out of danger. With only 44 MiGs in the North Vietnamese Air Force, the planes were sent out sparingly until that day. They would do whatever it was in their power to hurt the Americans. After the bombs were dropped, the A-4s headed back to base, while a squadron of MiGs, outnumbering the Crusader fighter jets, appeared behind the Americans. After a ferocious dogfight, the Crusaders downed four MiGs, but the American losses were higher. Three Crusaders were lost, and the bombing was not successful. This is, of course, a seemingly unknown prediction at the time, that America was to lose the war. Of course, dogfights are not as common now, and our technology with the planes has increased, making aerial combat a much harder task. There are still Phantoms flying today, their high-powered engines making them a good Navy plane. Fighter jets have definitely advanced, but without the help of the Crusader and the Phantoms during the Vietnam War, we would not have had need to advance as far as we have come. Hopefully you found this topic just as interesting as I did. After all, fighter jets are pretty cool. Thanks for listening, and as always, stay tuned for more of This Week in History.
Thanks, Jenna. One thing I really do like about this podcast is the ability for students to come up and learn about things and share that knowledge with people that they wouldn't get in a typical history class. And I'll be honest, my understanding of fighter aircraft or aircraft of any kind is poor. And so it's always interesting to hear about something that, again, I don't know very much about. So I get to learn as a teacher what's going on. And I do enjoy that. All right, so for our last two segments, It's actually just going to be basically one segment, just covering two different sides of the same coin. And that's going to be a movie review, or two different movie reviews, of We Were Soldiers. The first is going to be by Sam and Nolan, and they're going to give you their take. And then Steven is going to jump in and give you his take on the movie.
Hello, everyone. Today, Sam and I will be telling you about one of the best movies about the Vietnam War out there, called We Were Soldiers. We Were Soldiers is a war film from the year 2002. The movie is specifically talking about the Battle of Ledrang in 1965.
The main character in this movie is Lieutenant Colonel Hal Moore, played by Mel Gibson. His wife, Julie Moore, is played by Madeline Stowe. Greg Kinnear plays Bruce Snake Crandall. And Sam Elliott plays Basil Plumley. Barry Peppers plays the character of Joey Calloway, a reporter that comes to check in on the Americans in the battle, and also wrote the book with Hal Moore that this movie is based off of, We Were Soldiers Once and Young.
This movie is about Hal Moore, a U.S. Army lieutenant colonel, and how he is chosen to lead a group of 400 soldiers to fight at the Battle of Ledrang. This battle takes place at the Ledrang Valley in Vietnam. After an American base is attacked, Moore is selected to lead these men and go to the Ledrang Valley and eliminate Vietnamese attackers. Little did the United States Army know, this Valley of Death was a base for 4,000 Vietnamese troops.
In the movie, Moore focuses on using helicopters to their advantage by using them to constantly be moving troops into the battle zone and taking the wounded away. Other big advantages Moore has is the use of artillery, which are a significant reason the United States is able to hold their ground and fight off the Vietnamese troops. This battle lasted 4 days, with the United States eventually winning the battle. This movie also gives a small look from the perspective of the families of the soldiers at battle. Julie Moore, Hal Moore's wife, lives in a neighborhood with other families of the battalion soldiers off at war. In the movie, Julie receives letters from the government that tell the recipients of their loved one's death, and takes them to the families they are really for. This part of the movie shows how emotionally damaging the war was for the families of the U.S. soldiers at battle. Thank you for listening to our podcast.
I'll be discussing the facts of the film titled We Were Soldiers, directed by Randall Walls. The movie is based on a book, We Were Soldiers Once and Young, on the Battle of Ledrang on November 1965. The battle was led by Lieutenant General Moore of the 7th Air Cavalry. The 7th Cavalry was made famous by Colonel Custer for the last stand at the Battle of Little Bighorn on June 25, 1876. A reporter was also at the scene named Joseph L. Galloway, nicknamed Joe, of McClay newspaper as a senior military correspondent. In the movie, most of the battle were fought in daylight, but in reality, most of the action occurred in dark. The Viet Cong mastered a military strategy called guerrilla warfare, using their jungle-like terrain and the cover of darkness to their advantage. When the U.S. landed on the field, they were unaware of the vast numbers and had a hard time seeing due to the thick bushes. During the battle, the 7th Air Cavalry were cut off and surrounded, forcing Moore to call in a military code named Broken Arrow, which is a phrase that a ground unit facing imminent destruction from the enemy attack and all available aircraft within range are to provide air support. Some of the aircraft, including the B-52, contain incendiary explosive and flammable substance called napalm. This mixture creates a jet-like substance that, when ignited, sticks to practically anything and burns up to 10 minutes. They were used in flamethrowers for the U.S. ground troops to burn down sections of the forest and bushes in hope of eliminating any enemies. The movie is fairly accurate to the final battle scene. In the movie, all the remaining soldiers prepare their weapons by placing bayonets on their M16 for close-range combat. They race to the hilltop where the NVA headquarters is located, killing the enemies as they run through. Unaware that the enemy knew about their assault and were ready to defend their location. As they reached the hilltop, helicopters provide aid right before they were slaughtered. But in reality, this didn't happen. The 7th Air Cavalry Division was airlifted off the site, and another division that was sent in was ambushed in a different location.
Thanks, guys. Well, that does it for this week in history class, for episode 10. We want to thank everyone who helped with the podcast this week. Brooklyn, Savannah, Rachel, Jenna, Sam, and Nolan, and finally Steven for their inputs and their history extras this week. As always, we want to thank Ethan Frazier for our theme music. If you'd like to follow us on social media, we are on Twitter, or we're at Twitter, at TWIHC, at TWIC. And I personally am on Twitter, at TeacherJLars. And I'm also on Instagram, at TeacherJLars. Thank you again to everyone who helped out. Have a great week. We hope to have you here listen to us again next week. This has been This Week in History Class. So long.